What's the common theme about why they're not happy or not healthy? It is around lack of connection to people and lack of connection to nature. And if you can bring those together, wouldn't that be the best healthcare system you could possibly have?
Have you ever heard of Blue Health? I hadn't. And this week's guest has. He's actually created an entire world out of it. Nick Hounsfield, who is a former osteopath, and he has become the visionary founder of The Wave and One Blue World. This is the most incredible story, a true entrepreneurial fairy tale, so to speak, where you start the story with £500, but with a vision to revolutionise our health, our well-being, and create a piece of the ocean in the middle of Bristol. Over 10 years, Nick basically faced an absolute whirlwind of challenges. As I said in this fairy tale, we have got the lows over and over again, trying to raise £23 million to do basically the impossible. And the impossible is what he did. But with this soulful outlook, with a purpose beyond his vision, the dream, in a way, the dream and the vision was the lowest priority in the end. Trading in smiles, he said. It is one of those podcasts where you're going to have to get that pen and paper. You're going to have to blow away the cobwebs. You're going to have to believe that you, if you want to, can achieve the impossible, because that's what Nick's unwavering determination did. So sit back, think of the impossible, and enjoy.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. So let's begin this week's conversation of inspiration. Nick, such a pleasure to meet you and have the opportunity to capture your... I've got to say to everyone, this is going to be an incredible story, but welcome to Conversations of Inspiration.
Oh, thank you for having me.
For those of you who don't know Nick, Nick is the founder of The Wave and One Blue World. And you're a person who's been passionate about people, the world, nature, human health, tech, which is a pretty good way to start your days. What's it like being Nick?
Confusing. Not quite knowing which hat to pull on every day, really. But no, I guess my day is always interesting. Always stuff gets thrown at me. I guess it suits my personality where I do quite like to sort of, almost like a magpie, I like to see lots and lots of things and try to come up with a sort of cohesive way of living, working, that's based around all the things that I absolutely love. So I try to surround myself with stuff that I feel is incredibly positive for me, but also positive for the world, and try to bring it all together, really.
Wow.
Is probably what I do.
Is how old are you?
I'm 50, nearly 51.
Do you think you're living, because we're going to get into your story, I'm going to be turning 48 next year, and there's this sort of point where you start to go, I have created a world around everything I love.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we look back in our 20s and things like that, but now I've built a life with everything I love. And do you think you're in that place?
I definitely am. But I guess I've always got an itch to scratch going, that's fine for me, but how can we make sure that other people have got that feeling? So I think that's the bit that is always clawing away at me, where I'm wanting, absolutely, as you say, I feel I should on the surface be incredibly fulfilled. Mm-hmm. But equally, it's something that I feel a lot of other people should feel like that. And it worries me, it saddens me that other people don't feel like that. And I guess it's then like, how can I take what I feel I've learned over the last 50 years and impart that to other people to make them happy, be in service for others, really. So I never sit here feeling smug that I've kind of got the golden answer or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's more like understanding where life is going well and life isn't going quite so well, and how can I impact people's wellness on a big scale that more people feel happy and healthy and contented.
Gosh.
In this sort of weird world that we live in, really.
We've just met, but I will tell you that you've almost, I'm writing down what you're saying, because what you've just said there, I feel completely the same in terms of I'm at this age where I should be just sort of settled, and I am settled in who I am, but I want it for other people. And I think that already 4 minutes in, we're joined at the hip with, I feel like I'm of service to others. I want other people to build what they love what they do. And, you know, so this is going to be a great recording. We're going to get back to you, though, here in terms of, right, so for everyone, The Wave is an inland surfing destination in Bristol, and it's set amongst this most beautiful greenscape. And I can imagine you've had such a busy summer. And I've been following you because you've been doing lots of on Instagram, and you've been hosting events like the English Parasurfing Open and the Surf Show, as well as putting on lots of activities. It must be an amazing feeling to watch people over this summer come together through The Wave. Is this what you dreamt it would look like?
That's such a good question. It is. It absolutely is. But there's a hesitation in my voice, is because I always think about what could be, like where the potential impact of what we're doing. And, you know, I'm probably hard on myself, and I'm probably a pain in the ass to a lot of the people at The Wave, because I'm always thinking about what's next rather than feeling fulfilled of what we've achieved already. And that, I think at times that probably weighs quite heavy on myself and also the team at The Wave, because they're sort of constantly looking for what we could still continue to strive for. But without a doubt, like if I just get perspective at times and just sit there and go, actually can be incredibly happy that like we created this slice of ocean inland, which is a bonkers thing to do, and create perfect surfing waves for people of all ages, all backgrounds and abilities to be able to use. And they do use it. It isn't just a sort of middle-class pastiche of surfing. It delivers some really cool social impacts and so much to be excited about and proud about. But I guess it's just in my personality to always think like, how much more could we do? How much more could we do?
Well, you're a true entrepreneur. No, I mean, that's, unfortunately, this is the, I don't want to be an affliction, but it is in a way, because you never sort of look back and cherish those milestone moments. You know, you're just always in the future with editing what you've created.
Yep.
And so for those around us, it is difficult. It is hard because, you know, can they not be happy, please?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it is for us to, you know, but that's the deal, isn't it? And you have to sort of live with that in your own head as well, which can be very, very hard. Nick, I want to go back to the little you. Mm-hmm. I know you were born in Bristol, and I read that your happiest times as a child were when you were by the water, fishing, sailing, swimming, surfing with your father, Brian. And he was an osteopath and a sailing enthusiast. Mm-hmm. And he introduced you to surfing in Cornwall when you were very little. What do you think it was about the water that spoke to you so much as a child?
I guess right back at the beginning, it was probably the excitement of it, is just being in and around water. It's just exciting. It's such a different medium. Like for humans, you're just, you know, everything you're grown up around is being pinned to the ground. So when you start to crawl and when you start to walk, it's all around getting over the barrier of gravity and getting used to that. And I think there's something just amazing about being in and around water that just brings your senses completely alive in a different way. And it can be really scary for people. Well, it's probably scary for probably everybody who very first starts to get in water, whether they're swimming or paddling or what have you, because it is a very different feeling to be not at the behest of gravity. But I think it's really exciting when you're in a completely different medium and feeling, you know, the sensation of having something all enveloping around your skin and being held up by water, particularly salt water, is pretty amazing. And I think that that's the excitement that I felt right at the beginning, almost probably like when babies are tiny and they get in the bath for the first time. It's just such a different feeling. And I think that that's something that just that has kind of perpetuated through life. And then obviously he's just continued from childhood to an adult. I'm still a big baby.
But I've never heard anyone talk about water in that way. And it's one of the things I absolutely adore about doing this podcast is, you know, I'll have a farmer talking about soil. You know, you're talking about water. These are things that we are so fast, aren't we? We don't take the time to actually understand these things. And you've so eloquently, I'm sure everyone's nodding, thinking, God, why haven't I thought about water in that way? And we're going to talk about how water has basically been within your life and almost you've come full circle, like so many of my guests do. You know, what they were, who they were as a child is really at 40, 50, hopefully what they've returned to. Were you academic at school? Because you took to water very, very well. You were a natural. Did school come naturally to you?
Probably not. I think, you know, like loads of people nowadays seem to sort of think that maybe, you know, maybe I wasn't the kind of person. I think I am academic, but not in a conventional school-based way. Mm-hmm. Probably don't fit into the academic system as we see it at the moment. I think I've got a decent brain on me, but doesn't quite fit within the normal educational system. So at school, I wasn't brilliant. I'm still not brilliant at just sitting down for half an hour or an hour and being focused on a single thing. Probably a bit more flighty than that. Probably a lot of people would say, I don't know, ADHD or what have you. I don't think I'm that, but I think too curious, don't like to just sit down for too long focusing on one thing. I want to get up and try stuff out. And so I was probably a pain in the ass as well. I know I am a pain in the ass as when I was at school. I think that it's interesting. I've looked at some of my old school reports and it says disruptive, but I think it was I look at that as a positive thing that I was like wanting
to get out,
to break free of the shackles of just talking about something that felt like quite inane at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, even as a 40-year-old to be thought as disruptive, I go, well, that kind of...
Well, that's brilliant, isn't
I've been
it?
I've been really, really consistent throughout my whole life. So that's fine.
But this disruptive person, this person who couldn't sit still, wanted to get out. I was wondering then what your next steps would be, because when you were older, despite your love of all things water, you actually followed in your father's footsteps and trained as an osteopath. And then you went to set up a family practice with your wife, Juliana. Mm-hmm. Am I right in saying that your sister Wendy also joined along with your father? So you had this career as an osteopath for 18 years, and throughout that time you were seeing people who were suffering from very, very similar issues. Tell me about that time in your life and how it began to shape your thinking. And from that disruptive can't sit still, did it surprise you that you became an osteopath?
To some degree. I think probably if I was to sort of define how I was as a young child always wanting to be outdoors, not afraid to take risks, be just in my element when I'm outdoors, fundamentally. Like if it was around water, then great, but actually it was just about being outdoors. And if I look back, probably the key thing I would also say I really cared about people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the thing that's run through my entire life. I can remember, like, my parents were quite religious. We used to go to Sunday school and stuff. And I can remember that I would always, and this isn't me blowing smoke up my own, but I was always attracted to the people that were feeling like they were marginalized or left out. So I remember there was this guy called Toby who I think he had a condition called, looking back, acromegaly. It's almost like giantism. Had a really thick tongue, couldn't really speak brilliantly, looked very different to everybody else. But I can remember sitting with him for hours and hours, chilling out with him when everybody else was running around after Sunday school playing football or getting sweets and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I can remember just him becoming a really good pal of mine. And it's weird that it's something from a really young age, I was intrigued by people who looked quite different to me, and wasn't afraid to make contact with those kind of people. And I was subsequently was thinking about it, that my great aunt, who unfortunately, I think she got a really nasty meningitis, and she, even though she got up to sort of the ripe old age of about 50, 60, she was never able to go above sort of 7 years old, as, you know, mentally. And we lived with her and loved her to bits with my grandparents. And it made me reflect back in terms of wanting to care for people, and something that really was developed by my grandparents, how they looked after my great aunt, you know, living with them, and how important that was in terms of understanding how important it is to care for people that you love, and that care shouldn't be any kind of boundaries to that. And I think that's something that really, it's only on reflection that it's like, well, of course I really care about people, because that's something that my nan and granddad did for my Aunt Flossie and my parents. You know, my mum's a counsellor, or was a counsellor, my dad's an osteopath. So that sort of caring feeling has run through our family for generations, really.
Being in your DNA, in your blood, you grew from your seed, you know, into the tree that you are today. But that was in, you know, that is in your blood, in your psyche. And I was interested when I was researching for this podcast that during your time as an osteopath, you also started noticing stress levels in your clients, and this thing that you have, this gift that you have, obviously, for talking to people and people feeling comfortable to talk to you, came through as well in your clients as an osteopath.
Yeah, 100%. You know, sort of as much as, you know, being an osteopath or being any kind of somebody who sort of does sort of physical intervention on people's health, actually a lot of it is around talking to people. What I realise is that fundamentally most people that were coming to see me, yeah, they did have an ailment, but ultimately it was because of a lack of connection. It's almost like a loneliness, and it was a loneliness either because they're not connected to other people, they weren't talking to other people for whatever reason, and also that lack of connection to nature. And we just know that, you know, if you're not talking to people and you're not getting out into nature, that's where your health completely starts to deteriorate and start going, well, wait a second, like, a lot of people are coming and paying decent money to come and talk to me and have some hands-on therapy, but talk to me. It's like, that's bonkers. It's like, and how can we shift that? Because I can only see one person at a time over an hour, maximum could probably see 18 patients in a day. I was like, well, that's bonkers. Like, how can we impact more people who, and also people who can't necessarily afford it? And what is this? What's the common theme about why they're not happy or not healthy? It is around lack of connection to people and lack of connection to nature.
Those two things.
And if you can bring those together, wouldn't that be the best healthcare system you could possibly have?
Oh gosh, absolutely. And this link, I think it's obviously growing and growing, isn't it, in terms of as our awareness, that people's awareness of their health, this link between our mental health and our physical health, and is so intrinsically linked. And we've got a very long journey as people in the healthcare to understand that. I know, very sadly, not long after this, your father was diagnosed with cancer, and that his illness and that losing him had a profound effect on you and your sort of desire to make a difference on the world. I mean, it was already brewing, quite frankly, but was that a moment in time? Can you share a little bit about that period of time and how it's been ever since?
I mean, it was just, earth shaking. It was like the most enormous earthquake in my heart and my soul, really. You know, my connection to dad was incredible. It's really lucky to had that relationship. And I was the only son, but we did do so much together. And without it feeling cliched, you know, he was my best friend as well as my father. So you lose both in one fell swoop.
I'm so sorry.
But I guess, you know, it's, we had such a strong connection, but also very similar as people. And there was a little bit of me, a big bit of me, that wanted to do something as a legacy to him, because I felt like what he was wanting to achieve, and I guess he was in service his whole life for other people. It's like, well, how can I do something that would be really profound in his name, that would feel like, you know, something that he would be proud of as me as his son, but equally proud as a legacy that he had laid down, because he laid down the groundwork for everything that I'd done up until now. Mm. So that was a big part. And then there's this sort of mortality thing where I was like, well, wait a second, Dad worked like Billy-O till like 64. And he was just about to come into his peak of enjoying the fruits of his labour. And that was just sadly taken away from him. And I was like, life's too short. I can't do that. I can't follow his footsteps to a grave at 64 years old. Mm. I've got to do it now. I've just got to do something now. So, yeah, it's sort of, yes, it's weird sort of combination of wanting to do something in his honour as a legacy, but equally realising, very clearly realising, the issues that were out there that we could help people on a much bigger scale.
And the time you had, and the time you had to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah, the clock is ticking.
And, yeah, it's got to be now. It's got to be now.
It's got to be now. And I know, in a way, you made a promise to him, something bold, something that would leave this positive impact on people and the planet. Mm-hmm. Was that the start of the idea for The Wave? Was that the, you know, not literally a light bulb moment, but was that the light bulb era that you can look back at?
Yeah, it's probably somewhere around sort of 3 to 6 months where that sort of was starting to formulate, where, you know, without a doubt, you're going through grief with a sort of hint of sort of feeling depressed around losing somebody who's so important, but then trying to turn that around, put perspective on it, and try to bring, I guess, the optimistic side of it and go, well, this could be the sort of jump start, the sort of spark that starts something like a new chapter that mm-hmm. potentially could bring the positivity around what's happened, rather than being fully immersed in the negativity around grief and sorrow and everything that comes along with that. So, you know, and the grief never stops. I feel, you know, I can tear up right now thinking about him, but you just have to get on with life to some degree and try to just do your best in his honour, but also so that you feel that you've achieved and fulfilled your own expectations that you have on yourself and the potential that you've got in yourself.
I think pressures can be enormously helpful as well, you know, especially that I'm building this picture of you. I recognise him because I've got a bit of all of this in myself where, you know, there is a pressure to sort of change people's lives. You were thinking about positively impacting planet and society, and you started to think about these spaces that were different where generations could, you know, socialise freely. And I saw that you said, you know, the best examples you could think about were Mediterranean beaches on holiday. Mm-hmm. But how are you going to create that feeling, that ideal, that sort of bringing people together? Mm-hmm. But in Bristol, that's the thing. So you had this strong vision, you wanted to impact people. But at this stage, you had, well, you had your family business, but no sort of external business experience necessarily. And I read you had a huge mortgage. You just had £500 to play with. Mm-hmm. You had a huge logistical mountain to climb. I'd love to hear about that beginning bit. And then I can't actually quite cope that you raised 28 million quid. Because for me, that's, you've gone from that to 28 million pounds. So I want to hear about the early days. And then what gave you the courage to not just raise, well, it probably was the size of the quote to build it, but that courage to go for that tiny amount of money?
Yeah. So I guess right at the beginning, it was about starting to pull together the vision of what that place and space could be, but probably more importantly, the purpose that could serve. So being able, like if I said, I want to build a surf park so that lots of people could learn to surf. Yeah, there might be some people that would back that and I guess take a little bit of risk on something like that. But with the size of the check that we needed, it takes much more than that. And actually the foundation was around, much more around this sort of health and well-being agenda, where you start going, well, what we want to do, and I guess it goes back to the reason why, like the purpose of what we wanted to build, which was trying to impact people of all ages, all backgrounds, all abilities to be as healthy as possible and have a really great connection to themselves, other people and the planet, and how that will serve to stand them in great stead, you know, from a health and well-being agenda. So it's much, much bigger than just surfing.
Yes.
In fact, surfing could be, in some ways, surfing is the hook that brings people and makes it kind of sexy and marketable. But actually, it's about getting people together and getting people outdoors and in nature, being active, eating mm-hmm. good food, having good conversations, and just being together, that connectivity. So going right back, it was like having a really, really clear vision, very, very clear purpose about what we're wanting to achieve and what success could look like. And then building out the vision according to that and to that purpose. So then when you start to sort of find a physical place, a space, and how you're actually going to deliver that, it starts to become a bit more tangible. It's still a huge leap for people to go, well, we're going to build a slice of ocean inland. But actually, when you start to look, you know, break it down to the constituent parts, we were just sort of needing to find some land that we needed to build a huge lake and get planning permission on that mm-hmm. and then go out and raise the money. I guess you always... Well, I felt like you can't do it all. So you just got to break it down into parts, you know, bite-sized chunks that you can just bite off and move on to the next bit, really. Mm. If I was constantly purely thinking about the whole, you know, the whole
yes.
of what we were, then it would just be way too overwhelming. But being able to break it down into, you know, constantly said, like, in 6 weeks, we will. And everybody just takes the mickey out of me going, oh, yeah, you and your 6 weeks. Because 6 weeks felt like it's far away enough to be achievable, but not quite in the immediate moment.
Yes.
So everything was just like, in 6 weeks, we will be doing this, that and the other. And yeah, that 6 weeks went on for 10 years. But we still were able to bicycle chunk, being able to achieve stuff that allowed us to get the wave built.
Gosh.
And fundamentally, it's about having good relationships, good connections, meet amazing people, build amazing team of people who have done stuff before that is, you know, complementary for what we're wanting to achieve. You know, in many ways, not having any expertise in any of it meant that I could always be the dumbest person in the room, always bring on the expertise, always like, who's the best person to bring in to help with this particular project?
Yeah.
And not have my own hang-ups because I just honestly knew nothing, and learn, just stay curious, just constantly learning and finding out how to achieve what feel like the, you know, the unachievable at that time.
Gosh.
But there's always amazing people around. And,
yeah.
And I think as long as you're able to sell that clear vision and the purpose as to why you're wanting to achieve something, it's shown that people will follow you and going to be with you all the way on it.
With autumn upon us and time flying by, I'm thrilled to be back with a brand new series of Conversations of Inspiration. If you're a new listener, a big hello from me and a warm welcome. And if you've been part of this community for many years, welcome back. At Holly & Co, we're not just a small business marketplace. We're a small business marketplace with a purpose. It's our mission to create a more thoughtful way for people to shop, live and work, so that we're all better able to show our love for others as well as the world we live in, and spend our 29,000 days on this planet doing something worthwhile. From unique handmade gifts for every possible occasion in your life, to homeware made to last, everything we sell is carefully curated and supports a UK artist or maker. We also share all kinds of ideas to help you live creatively and all the tools and confidence you need to start your own business if you want to. And not just a good business, but a business that does good. To find out more, just visit holly.co or sign up to our emails. I write every single one. For now, let's get back to our conversation of inspiration. Breaking it down, roughly your 6-week sprints is roughly you've got 9 of them in a year. Mm-hmm. And so breaking this project down, so then you did it over 10 years. So you had sort of like 96 week sprints mm-hmm. that you basically achieved the impossible. And so when we think about the power of storytelling, that you were telling people, I'm going to build a slice of the ocean in Bristol, and I'm basically going to help people to better happiness and health. And are you with me? Mm-hmm. Being the pipe piper of this dream and, you know, people following you, but not because you're the leader, but you're the leader of the vision that they can now have a chance to be part of as well. And it's so, so powerful. So in November 2019, it was complete and you were open to the public. And And then what I always laugh about is when we launched Holly & Co. And there's just this thing of building a business and it's not for the faint of heart. So, you know, it's so difficult. But then there's just day one. You've got to start. I mean, you're just like, hang on a minute. I've just nearly killed myself doing this. And we're going to talk about that. But, you know, and now it's day one. I've got to have all the energy to now do day 1, 2, 3. And tell me about that, because to secure that amount of money, but also to harness this cutting edge technology, which is, as we say, bringing this slice of the ocean to Bristol, engineering challenges, no doubt everything did not go to plan. To give people a sense, and I'm everyone's going to be YouTubing it after this, is it's you created this lake, but it's about the size of 5 football pitches that pushes out up to 1,000 waves an hour. Fanning 6 different zones and catering for different levels of surfers and different abilities. And I remember talking to Tim Smith, who built Eden, and it's just the sheer scale of things. You know, there's one thing I would say, you know, but it's the sheer scale of this vision. How did you keep optimistic through all of this? You know, because no doubt you just had setback after setback, normal, you know, normal as we build. But how did you just keep going?
I guess having no option helps.
I know. These profound questions and you're like, oh, what was the actual bloody choice there? I'd risked my entire being on it.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was, just going fully all in and making it very, particularly once it all went public, you had no choice but to truck on, just keep going without a doubt. I guess there's also a tinge of naivety. It's just, you know, it's good that we didn't really know how important it was at the time. We were just, you know, you just heads down doing and not necessarily stepping back and thinking about all the risks involved. I guess the reputational risks of off, you know, what happens if it doesn't go well? Yeah, you just heads down making sure that that never happens. But yeah, all along that whole sort of 10-year journey, I think sort of once it became really public and almost sort of made sure that we were holding ourselves to account, but also the public were holding ourselves to account to make sure it gets done. And that's about selling an incredible vision of something that people just wanted to work and to succeed. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we've got amazing sort of crowdfunders. We had to do a whole crowdfunder campaign and stuff. So we ended up, you know, with 250,000 followers of people that just wanted it to work.
Yes.
And I think that does give you a real power, an authority to just go, you know, this has to work because so many people are relying on us to make it work. But also we can't be the people that it doesn't happen on our watch. We have to do it. It's just too important to do. So this real sense.
And that pressure of other, you know, it's why potentially when we think about our worlds being of service, you know, that when we say we don't have choice, I mean, not only do we give our souls into this, you know, all in, right? So then that there is no turning back. So you've just got to move forward. But then of being of service when people are your fuel, then actually that was the drug of choice. You know, that was what was keeping you going. And I read that you said, but once everyone had got through the, oh my goodness moment, which I love you saying that, you went into problem solving mode together. And actually it is that symbiotic sort of, I don't know, state the flow, in a sense, that you get into. You mentioned naivety, and I talk about naivety here as well, because I myself, you know, I'm worried I don't have enough naivety at Holly & Co, because ultimately I'm building another marketplace, which I did at Not on the High Street 20 years ago. Because when I built Not on the High Street, literally not a clue, right? Not a clue. So which allows you, when you think about, you know, if I was thinking as you were speaking, you know, if you were an investor, to invest in people who are smart, bright, driven, passionate, but not necessarily have done it before, because that potentially is where the magic happens, because they're able to just look at a blank page and create something. They don't have anything to hold on to, or the rule book or the structure or the map or all these sorts of things. Is that something now that you look to as a power source for you? Because a lot of people worry. I think people listening now, let's say you're thinking about an idea and you want to start, and especially women, you know, we have to become experts before we even start anything. That's a fact. You know, we always feel we have to be a master of something before we even show ourselves out. What would be your comment about naivety and using it in a non-negative sense?
Yeah, to me, naivety goes along with curiosity. And if you don't know stuff that you need to know, then you've got to be curious and investigate and research and become an expert in that particular field of what you're doing. You know, for me, because we were doing something totally, totally unusual, not been done before, it did allow me to become the expert in that field. I'm never going to be a complete expert in civil engineering or how to make waves or running a surf park or hospitality or whatever it might be. But actually, it's that classic thing of the sum of the parts is so important, like bringing it together as a wholly coherent vision. That's something that nobody at that particular time had ever done before. So yeah, I could go to experts, you know, for engineering or wave making or hospitality or whatever it might be. So you can pull people in from all of these amazing industries to try and get the best information. But ultimately, it's you that's put together this sort of cohesive vision of what it will look like when it's finished, exactly the same as Tim Smith did.
Absolutely.
Nobody in the world had built, you know, they're definitely people who've built these sort of plastic structures, dome structures. There's definitely people who've done horticulture, you know, hospitality, leisure, all the rest of it, but nobody had done it in a new cohesive vision. And that's exactly what he did. And so it's just always making sure, like I said, is making sure that you're bringing in experts in their particular fields, but understanding that they've not put together that cohesive vision like you're wanting to do.
Your fingerprint, Nick.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's uniquely your fingerprint. That's the beauty of this, is it's your mark literally on our planet. It's like you put your big finger down and here is your mark of bringing all these people together. So the wave opened. So we're at this part of the story, everyone. We've turned the page here. It's November 2019, a project Nick's been working on for 10 years, making it a reality in a nice pun that probably Nick's ever heard, heard all the time, choppy waters and all that. And in February 2020, at the age of 48, you suffered a stroke that affected your ability to talk, read and write. And this stroke came out of the blue. You were playing hockey at the time. This was a time when we were going into the pandemic and all these sorts of things. What happened and how did you navigate this period of time? And literally, does it just happen out of the blue?
Yeah, totally, totally out of the blue. You know, you can always, with something, you can look back on life and see that there are probably some mounting sort of symptoms that were sort of starting to show. But I was pretty stressed at that time, without a doubt. There's some stuff going on that, you know, I was not sleeping brilliantly and was stressed, without a doubt. But it's not a stress that I hadn't had before. But just had just some slightly weird symptoms. And yeah, I was just playing hockey one day. Apparently I was quite distant. You know, a lot of the team players said, oh, Nick was a little bit, wasn't quite himself on that day. And then, yeah, just was running around right at the beginning of the hockey match. And suddenly my vision wasn't quite right. I wasn't tracking the ball well. I was missing the ball. I just wasn't quite right. And then suddenly started to drop. The grip on my hockey stick was getting looser and looser. I thought, well, that's a bit weird. And then I just felt, all I can say is just felt quite scared, quite anxious, and like something bad was happening. And I couldn't put my finger on what was going on.
Gosh.
So I was like, all right, I'm going to... And it was weird. It was like an out-of-body experience. It was like I was watching everything from about a meter behind and above me, watching everything play out. It was really, really freaking strange. So I just put the fear of God on me. So I just ran off to the dugout, and then everybody started to ask, like, Nick, you've just started the match. What's wrong? Well, get back onto the pitch. And I knew what I wanted to say, but I couldn't say anything. And all I could say was, and then more and more people started asking, like, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on?
Yeah.
And I just couldn't speak. And that's then when somebody who's a medic in the background said, oh my God, I think he's having a stroke. And the second he said that, I was like, oh, holy crap, I'm having a stroke. I know exactly what the symptoms of a stroke are, and I'm having it. I've lost my grip.
Yeah.
I can't speak. My eyes are going weird. Yeah, something really bad is going on. And yeah, that was the start of... yeah, complete new chapter in my life, really. Just suddenly realizing that I'm not invincible anymore.
Gosh.
Yeah.
So this happened. So I'm thinking of this person who is all go, all the time, energy, leader, consumed with the wave, consumed with what you're building. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, I mean, it must be from someone who, again, feels quite similar to yourself. It's like, an idea of hell, of course, because of the stroke, but also just stopping, you know, stopping what you're doing.
Mm.
Your first months of recovery, talk to me about what that was, because I know that you were watering the plants around the wave, you were cleaning the lake, you were getting into the water. And this itself had another profound effect on you and another sort of a moment of realization of what also was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess those first few months, you know, it was in pandemic. I was pretty much just in the room I am right now, just with the dog, just alone with my thoughts. You know, kids were at school, my wife was working. I spent a lot of time just listening to podcasts, reading or trying to read and just reflecting. And then once we were able to sort of get out a little bit more and, you know, I was able to, for the first time, to actually go and enjoy the wave and what we'd created, being able to be in and around water. You know, it was still in lockdown, but I was able to at least get outside and utilize that space, which is, you know, in many ways was a massive blessing, because I guess going right back to the beginning of when we opened, I've always thought it feels like inviting loads of hypercritical people into your home when you've only just bought it and you've not even moved in yet.
What a brilliant analogy. Gosh,
but it is, it's just like opening up something massively publicly before you've even had a chance to use it and own it and enjoy it yourself. So it was a real blessing to have that time where I was able to be in and around the water and cleaning the lake and all that sort of stuff. But what I did then realize is that every single day I was cleaning the lake and being in and around water, I was actually getting better. The two things that helped me was sleeping in the afternoon seemed to really help my brain health and get me back getting better, and being in water. And I just, you know, that connection, again, that sort of connection to being in and around water and how important that always had been in my whole life and how that was becoming something that was really, really healing to me. Suddenly that realization that, oh, well, of course, this is why we built this blooming place. It's like, this is a panacea for health. Like we've been really sort of, I guess, going down this route of like, we've got to get open and get Obviously, we need to sort of make money to be able to pay the investors and all the rest of it. But actually, fundamentally, going back to the original premise of it, which was blue health, getting people outdoors and into nature and being able to make people healthy again or help people get healthy again, I was experiencing that. And then, of course, then once the pandemic started to sort of everything open up again, it was such an easy thing to market and talk to people about. Yes. Like the thing that we've been restricted from over the last year is now being opened back up, and that connection to people, connection to planet, and being outdoors in nature, being happy, healthy, and exercising, this is all opened up again to us, and we need to sort of seize the day. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's why that particularly that first year post-pandemic was boom, because nobody was traveling abroad. People were looking for something to do that was fundamentally far more healthy than what they'd been doing in lockdown. And therefore, you know, that narrative that I'd gone through in life and lockdown and surviving the stroke actually is a very, that's what everybody had been going through. I think loads of people through their life has been going through almost like a stroke where they've not actually understood the power of what we have around us and how important it is to utilize it and protect it. And it's something that I'm hoping, although I think stuff's been slipping, I'm hoping that people still treasure the fact that there's a connection to people and connection to planet that is incredibly important, and that we need to protect it. Mm. It's so important to us for the health of the planet and the health of people and the health of yourself.
Yes. Gosh. And when I was looking, statistics are saying 65% of people find being near water improves their mental health, and the sound of water can not only relieve stress, but can, you know, aid concentration. And it's why, I mean, I fall asleep each night to water on my Calm app. And it's all of those sorts of things. And isn't it funny? I know exactly what you mean, that actually your entire purpose of building the wave when you started, was it 2009 that you started?
Yeah, 2009, yeah.
Was blue health. Mm-hmm. But you hadn't, it's almost like it was inside of you, but it hadn't seeped out yet.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? But actually, isn't that just amazing that you then went through all of this and it was like, finally, then it came through you. That was it. That was, I knew this. That was, that's what I've been doing. But now I've, truly, it's enlightened me. It's come out of me. This is it. And then you share it with the world and done. You know, the connection is formed.
Yeah.
And you have, from seeing this benefit yourself, going through that stroke with yourself, this blue health, which isn't something we talk about, I don't think. I mean, maybe I'm not a surfer. Maybe lots of people talk about blue health, but it's, you've also started working with One Blue World. So this is an aim to work with a network of partners and supporters to share a vision of connecting more people with blue spaces. Can you tell me about that? I haven't heard of One Blue World before.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that this is sort of, I guess, distilling all of my thoughts and ideas over the last sort of 10 years. This is fundamentally like what we've created the Wave, which is incredible, is that people come along. They have an amazing time, experience, an afternoon or a couple of days, feeling incredibly positive, being surrounded by very positive people who are very much try to build people's confidence and be around, you know, be in a place and a vibe that fundamentally feels really healthy and makes people happy. And we're basically trading in smile, like people are just getting out of the water or walking away from the wave, even if they've just been there to visit, just smiling. It's like that's just an amazing thing. We're making, you know, 150,000, 200,000 people every single year walk away smiling. But then they get back into their car and then they get back home and they get back to work and they're hankering after that feeling again, like you do when you go on holiday.
Yeah.
Where you have such a brilliant time.
And then you get the
holiday hopefully. Exactly. You start going, well, how, you know,
I need that all the time.
Yeah. Why can't I hold on to that feeling? What is that? Like we work like crazy for the snapshot of a few days or a few weeks where we feel alive again and then get back to the sort of, not everybody's in the doldrums, but you know, just getting back to the sort of rat race of what we're doing. that feels weird to me. It's like, why are we not living like we do on holiday? Or, you know, what's the difference? And that difference is around that nature connection, like living in places, spaces where you've got that community connection, that connection to people, but also that connection to planet, and how that can really be nourishing for your soul, for your health. So why are we not doing that? Like, let's try and reverse engineer what's going on. Why are we not doing that? Well, we're living in houses and communities that have lost that connection to nature, lost that connection to each other. Like, I've got, and it's by my own design, I know a couple of neighbours around me. I live in a nice area. It's fairly leafy green, considering we're in Bristol. But I don't know anybody around here. And that's because, for some reason, I've lost that connection to people in that neighbourhood. What if we designed places and spaces that goes back to the heart of why communities were built, which is around supporting each other, communicating with each other, breaking bread together, exercising, playing, working together. Whereas the whole world feels like it's moved to this sort of real disparate culture of looking after yourself, just looking after yourself, and almost like a selfish existence that doesn't connect people together, and that is the demise of people's health. So actually, One Blue World is a vision, I guess, more around if we were to design places and spaces based on the ethos of the wave, what would housing look like with that? What would workspaces look like? What would schools, what would health centres look like that? If we were to look at a much more holistic view of connecting people and the planet together, because we know there's like such a burden on the NHS because people are not self-prescribing things that make them feel good. They're relying on an NHS that is, you know, massively overburdened, and people should be self-prescribing what's good for them. And, you know, and you look at that also with schooling and housing and play and workspaces. Can we reimagine a future whereby these things are looked at much more holistically? And now I'm working with amazing partners who are actually looking at building new communities, new housing that actually gets to the heart of what we think are the sort of health issues, both for people but also for planet. Can we build stuff that actually is sustainable for the future and creates a healthier environment and healthier people?
Gosh.
So it's a big vision, but actually, you know, you look at, you know, particularly all the sort of stuff that's been going on with government over the last couple of years, it goes to the heart of how things have not worked very well as a society, as a country, because everybody's been taking a very self-centered, very short-term, financially incentivized decisions, rather than going long-term, much more strategic and balancing people, planet and profit together. Can we disrupt a health system, and can we disrupt a housing system that actually supports health? That's the vision, and I'm just pulling together, like I did right at the beginning with the wave, pulling together experts, industry experts that can help look at that as a problem and see if we can solve that.
Good for you. I mean, you'd think, I mean, it sounds like you're just beginning again. You're not looking back. you're going.
No, definitely not.
You've got the moon, you put a lasso on it, and you're holding on, and you are going all the way. And I thank God for humans like you. Thank God for humans like you with that longer term strategic thought and naivety around you that's powering you through to imagine different. And it's phenomenal. Can I just take a moment, because I realised that the timings that we were talking about, so you launched the wave in 2019, you then had a stroke, and then we had the pandemic. That is a shit storm that, do you know what I mean? Like, you must have been thinking after the stroke, are you joking me? Like, what is going on here? So we would think that anyway, right? As a pandemic and as brand new business a few months old, but to have a stroke as well, just to throw in, just talk to me about how you navigated that. Because there must have been, along with this recovery period, which I can imagine everyone saying to you, down tools. You can't think about things. You have got to look after your health. You've just had a stroke. Paralleled with your business baby that's taken you 10 years to birth and all the financial pressures are on your shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite a lot to navigate. But I guess you only do it in retrospect and you're looking sort of back on it because you know what it's like. You're just rolling with the punches at the time.
Bring it on.
Just in the moment, it's like, oh, yeah, just throw another thing at me. And it's only on reflection where you realise it was just an unholy trinity of things. But, you know, some of them, you know, they're all things that you can't really predict. You don't have control of. I guess that, you know, going back to what you were, you know, asking earlier around, you know, you can only control the things that you can control. Like being just, it's not giving up. It's just being at the mercy of the things that you can't control. Like the thing, like if I can control stuff and I make stupid decisions or what have you, then that's on my shoulders. But there's a whole load of stuff that happens externally, external factors that you just got to go, right, well, to me, that's entrepreneurship. That's not, entrepreneurship isn't starting something up and having a bit of an idea and trying to get it done. It's actually, entrepreneurship is an ongoing relationship with a business that you've created that means you're constantly sort of fleet of foot. You're making sure that you're constantly pivoting. You're constantly thinking of new ideas that will get you out of the shit storm that's going on at the moment. And I think that is what entrepreneurship is just being able to problem solve when stuff is thrown at you, not panicking, but trying to get perspective on whatever issues just being thrown at you, but very quickly shifting your mindset into how can we find the best out of a bad situation. And there are always going to be lots and lots of people around you that will tell you how bad it is, but there aren't many people that will think about what the sort of silver lining could be. And I think it's always like, what's the silver lining that could come from this?
Yeah.
Let's go for that instead of being in the doldrums.
Dell Technologies are passionate champions of small businesses. They recognise that it can be a lonely road, and so they have the Dell Women's Entrepreneur Network, or DWEN for short, which is a worldwide community of over 100,000 female founders. They run free events and mentoring programmes and have a network of brilliant women all connecting and sharing insight. They also recognise that for many small businesses, visibility is one of the biggest challenges they face when trying to reach new customers. So each week, Dell give away their ad break space. So now I'm going to hand over to this week's winner of Dell's independent ad break.
We are Cadaweth, a small family-run farm and business here in wonderful West Wales. Why Cadaweth? It's the name of our farm, and this is exactly where we want to be. C is for Cadaweth. Y is, yes, they are all made by hand. D, designed by us. A, artisan products. W, works of art. E, environmentally friendly. L, lovingly made. And L, literally from the farm. We make sustainable, eco-friendly products by working with our farm environment and all that this gives us. Things like windblown trees, bees and botanicals. You can find us on Facebook under Cadaweth. You can find us on Instagram under Cadaweth Farm or Sharon Forgan 1 and on Etsy under Cadaweth Creations.
Thank you, Dell, for your support and generosity. If you'd like to find out more about DWEN and connect with brilliant and inspiring women, or you'd like to be in with a chance to have your very own ad break here on this series, head to holly.co/Dell. Now, back to this week's conversation of inspiration. You're so eloquent, Nick, by the way. It's so good to speak to you because we're all here. Me too, right? We're all sitting here nodding like little nodding dogs, just really listening to what you're saying. Because there are so many people, the majority, I would say, intentionally and unintentionally, through fear or trying to protect you, who will tell you the worst, what could happen, doomsday, all levels, all barometers of doomsday. Mm. And it's very, very rare to meet people that, and I think it is, by the way, the sort of the knocks and blows that entrepreneurs have, what we go through and the strength that we gain from that. It's like we just, it's like problem solving is our sort of Duracell battery fuel, mm-hmm. right? So it's just the more you do it, the more your Duracell battery is full and can actually deal with the even higher level problems and then higher. Mm-hmm. Now, think about what you're just doing here. You're trying to, give blue health to everybody. You're mm-hmm. trying to basically give, you know, that's a huge, you need a good amount of resilience to be able to tackle something like that. And you feel in that power to do that. But it is exactly that when you just mentioned what could be the silver lining. And the amount of people that just want to punch you in the face, you know, which is that, you know, hang on a minute, I'm talking about doomsday. Are you not hearing me? And then your brain's going, yeah, but I bet you there's something in here. You know, I bet mm-hmm. you there's an opportunity in this shit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put the marigolds on. I'm searching mm-hmm. because, and it's this difference of being able to be positive, optimistic, but strategically optimistic, mm. you know, really seeing that. How do you deal with those naysayers? Do you just cut them out? What's
because
I'm not sure
all.
A lot of people
not
listening, by the way,
yeah.
have this, right? Because this yeah. is human nature. But families are trying to protect you, stop you doing that. You're spending this, you're taking a loan on the mortgage. You're, you know, what? How do you deal with them?
Such a good question, because it goes to the heart of from right at the beginning to right now. Going right back to the beginning, as I just said, this all happened off the back of my dad's death. My dad is the most risk-averse person out there.
If I thought he might be, by the way.
Yeah, if he knew what I did, he would be the person every single night would be calling me up and saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Why would you risk this? Why would you risk this? And in a weird... ironic way, it's almost through his death that allowed me to be able to not have somebody on my shoulder going, don't do it, don't do it. Mm-hmm. And then going forwards, you know, lots of people who, you know, have got the prophecy of doom around them and tell me, you know, what could go wrong or what has gone wrong or how terrible it is. And I don't block them out. I honestly do listen to them and hear them mm-hmm. and heed some of their worries and concerns. But equally at the same time, I'm sat there going, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm not you. Because I would hate to feel like that.
I would like hate that. To be, yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
It would be awful to go around thinking about what's worse the whole time.
I know.
But you know, it's, you know, that's part of, you know, that's part of being in a team. You need different personalities. You do need people
yes.
that will give
yes.
give you a bit of a reality check on stuff. But I've still not seen a reality check hard enough to me to make me stop what I'm wanting to do. Mm. And I guess, you know, there may be a time when I take on something that's too big and somebody goes, I don't think this is going to work. And I, on reflection, go, I think maybe you're right. But mm-hmm. so far, I've not seen that yet. I think there's always a way, you know, that sort of cliche, where there's a will, there's a way. Well, you know, if there is something that's so important to you with such a clear-cut, cohesive vision and purpose behind it, then I don't ever want to be the person that says no to it. It's just, mm-hmm. it might not be the right time. It might not be, you know, the right era to be doing it. But if something that is so important to make a difference to the world needs to be done, then there will be a time and a place to do it. And if I can be part of that, then I'll do it. And if not, I will absolutely happily set up something that future generations would be able to tackle themselves.
I have loved talking to you, Nick. You are special, 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 special. I'm getting to that point of the podcast, though, that I'm going to ask you about this roller coaster. And you've had quite a roller coaster, and this whole business journey, the journey in yourself through your business, which I think is so important that we say, because I'm so grateful of my own growth. I'm sure you are, through the tool of this business, through this vessel of the business, has given me so, so, so much in who I am today. What would you say, if you were on that roller coaster in your wetsuit, what would you say has been one of your biggest lows?
Apart from the things that we've been yeah. talking about earlier, I think the biggest low, there was definitely a moment in time whereby we got planning permission for the Wave. After 2 years, myself and my business partner, Craig at the time, had been all over the place trying to raise money. We did about 230 Dragon's Den style pitches trying to get the money. We managed to find an amazing investor who would back the vision to get it built. And then one of our landlords suddenly decided to pull the land deal from under our feet.
Oh my goodness.
And like, so we just literally done everything. And he said, oh, I just don't think it's going to work. You know, the land's not for rent anymore. I was like, oh my God, this is a disaster. And, you know, he's a lovely, lovely guy. But, you know, normally once he says something, he's not for moving. And I got off the phone to him. I can remember I was upstairs in my bedroom because the signal was a little bit better there, and got that. And that was the first time I sat down on my bed and cried, properly cried. And I just went, this is just too hard. Mm. And I just felt like, yeah, that was the end of the dream, really. And, you know, my dear son, Dylan, my youngest son, Dylan, came in, heard me crying and said, oh, Dad, what's wrong? I said, oh, I don't think the Wave's going to get built anymore. And he said, oh, don't worry, Dad. I know you're going to sort it out. I know you're going to sort it out. And then it's just that sort of moment of the confidence that my youngest, I think he was 6, 7 years old at the time.
He saw his dad.
Had in me to sort it out. I was going, oh, well, I can't let him down now. So, yeah, so just jumped in the car, just drove straight to the landowner and said, just pretty much just got on begging knees and just go, please. So I've done so much. Just give me a window to get this done. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and that.
And he changed his mind.
Changed his mind. Oh. And from then on, it was, yeah, it was a done deal and a big relief. But I didn't think, everybody had told me, you are not going to change that person's mind now. And so glad that I was able to. But it was the confidence of my son. You know, the faith that he had in me, I thought, I can't allow that faith to be misplaced.
Oh, I've got tears in my eyes. What a beautiful story. And what faith, you know, we can have in people mm-hmm. to share your true emotion with that man, which you must have, and he felt it. Yeah. And conversely, your greatest high, is it on a Wave? What's your greatest high?
My greatest high, I think was, so the first time I surfed a Wave at the Wave was a great moment. Honestly, it was great. But what was even better was, because they wanted to, I was absolutely shit scared. The BBC camera crew on me, live broadcasting.
I mean, no pressure. Yeah. After 10 years of doing this, now let's film you on the Wave.
Exactly. I mean. Yeah. Me by myself catching my first Wave was terrifying. But what was great is as soon as I caught the first Wave, realizing that that wasn't it, this was something that was meant to be shared, and hollowing over everybody else to come join me in the water. And then we had, you know, a 24 hours of bringing a whole community of people, again, all ages, all backgrounds, all abilities, coming and enjoying the space and the place that we'd built, seeing the smiles on people's faces. That was without a doubt the greatest thing, where, you know, without being weird, that it wasn't, honestly, it wasn't about me. It's not about what I've built and trying to get success from it. It was always about making people happy and healthy and putting smiles on people's faces. And whenever I see people smiling when they get out of the Wave or walking back to the car park with smiles on their faces, them all talking to each other, no phones, no anything like that. They're just talking. That's what makes me so happy. And that was definitely a defining moment where I realized that this wasn't about me and the success of building something that felt like the impossible. It was about sharing what we'd built
with others,
with the with yeah, and with the right purpose behind it.
Yeah, being of service.
Yeah.
Nick, this is just, it's going to be, wow, what a way to kick off my new series. Thank you so much. I'm tearing up already, even the thoughts of your letter, but I'm going to hand over to you now. It's something, as our regular wonderful listeners know, that we have been doing now for over 200 episodes, where we ask our amazing guests to share a letter with us from them to their younger self. And so this is the part, Nick, where I hand over to you, and thank you for sharing a piece of your soul with us today.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. Dear Nick, in your life, you're going to have some unbelievable moments, completely soul-defining moments of happiness, sadness, love, hate, all very opposing feelings, but it is really good to feel. Make sure you feel. It's really good to feel. What you need to focus on is enjoying life, bringing the joy, bringing your joy. There's a few learnings and pointers to help you on your quest for that fulfillment. Care. Just care for people, really care for people, and care about the planet that we all live in. Be in service to both of them. Don't do anything to jeopardize your soul and your values. Always go with your heart and your gut. Listen, there is so much bullshit out there. People reflecting their insecurities, and they may try and shape it and shape you. Just stay strong, stay very, very strong, but ultimately stay listening. Also stay curious, take calculated risks, but don't take on stuff you're not prepared for. Do prepare though, and then take it on. Trust is paramount. There's nothing more to say than just trust. And stay healthy. Stay healthy in your mind, your body, your spirit. Without these, it's all over. And you will be healthy if you're surrounded by people you trust and love. Make sure you get into nature, surf the oceans, fish the seas, climb and slide down mountains, but breathe in the good stuff. Exhale the bad stuff. You know the difference. It's in your gut and in your soul. But most will love. Love thoughtfully, deeply, passionately, and don't let anybody take that away. Trust, passion, care, love. These are going to be the bedrocks of what's good about your life. The palette of colour that will take your life and make it extraordinarily special. You have only one life, so use it well, my friend. And I'm going to be with you all the way.
I've loved every second of that letter. I've loved every second of this podcast, and your vision and your resilience and your tenacity and your courage to shift perspectives, shift our landscape, shift our impact that we're going to have for generations to come is nothing short of beautiful. And Nick, you've got us right here. Even for us who would never be able to stand up on a surfboard ever, I'm just applauding you from the sidelines, and I just wish you everything. Thank you so much for your story today.
Oh, thank you so much, Holly. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams, to build a life they love.